I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
And you can't teach that. Here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews. This is episode 71. And on today's show, it's time for a rumble. A Royal Rumble. And, well, yeah, it's the Royal Rumble. What else would you expect for the month of January? And this time out, we're going back to 1996. To take a look at the Royal Rumble of, well, 1996. That sounded a whole lot better in my head. But, yeah. This would be Shawn Michaels' second Rumble win in as many years of two, since he won the year before. And would be start the lead up to WrestleMania 12, where, of course, Shawn Michaels would face Bret the Hitman Hart in an Iron Man match. But yeah, that's kind of a hint of something that's going to be coming along in March. Wink, wink. So, yeah, Royal Rumble from 1996 will be the review for today. But we have some news to cover. I want to go over the WWE UK tournament, other things, and just... we have a lot to get into, which will hopefully be a whole lot better, more uplifting than... the events of the past couple days as part of this recording or recording's release date. And for all those future people, like those like 4 years down the line that listen to this, today's January 22nd. Just look in your history books and see what happened in the days before. And you will understand. And then you'll cry, and you'll wonder what the hell was wrong with my generation. And I will have no answer. But we're going to be bright. We're going to be happy, 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 joy, joy, happy, happy, joy, joy, happy, happy, joy, joy, happy, happy, joy, joy. I probably should stop joking around and get just right to it. I did actually, like I said, want to go over the WWE UK tournament, which happened last weekend, and which was won by Tyler Bates, who I really had not much experience watching at all, really. And in fact, a lot of wrestlers, like, I've heard most of the wrestlers' name, you know, I have been steadily watching, you know, WCPW, What Culture Pro Wrestling. And, of course, I've seen the clips from, like, Progress and ICW and Rev Pro. And of course, some of these wrestlers also, mind you, made their name over here. They've been in the, you know, PWG's Battle of Los Angeles. Pete Dunne, for that matter, was there this past year, along with Mark Andrews, which was probably the most well-known name of the tournament for those, because, of course, you know, he's in... How did Luke Gallows describe the company? America's Wrestling Alliance or whatever. Some joke. I can't. TNA. I can't remember. Dude. I was recently watching his interview along with his partner Carl Anderson. I think it was this past SummerSlam when he was with Sam Roberts. So, but you know, I've heard of Joseph Connors, who's been on WCPW. Of course, Tyler Bates and Tyler Seven were in Mustache Mountain, which is a tag team, so I've heard of them, and I slightly saw them. I'm trying to think of who else that I knew. I thought I heard of Drake, because I think he'd been in there, too. Like I said, I've heard of Mark Andrews, I've heard of Pete Dunne. The other, you know, Danny Burch, of course, he's been in NXT. So those are really the names I've heard. But, of course, I also heard great thing about the other. Like, I'd never seen Wolfgang before. But I heard good things about him. And I'm trying to think of... And really, that's it. Yeah, like, Wolfgang, I heard, like, it was like, oh, you'll be amazed with Wolfgang. And I'll be honest, I really love the tournament from front to back. There were, obviously, the current chant of the year... Coming from night one, from the... I actually don't have the tournament in front of me, but the... God, I'm blanking on the names. Huxley, and I think it's Blackwell. Who was from Blackpool, by the way. I guess in C, look. Now, I don't know, British fans would have to tell me if it's due to something that he looks like Jesus or because he talked about being sort of a wrestling philosopher, if people will call him Jesus or whatever. But, yeah, chant of the year so far is, hey, hey, Jesus, ooh, ah, I wanna know, won't you be my God? Hey, hey, Jesus, ooh, ah, I wanna know, won't you be my God? I'm Jewish, and that's fun to chant. And I could, damn, I could imagine just start chanting that in temple. People look like, what the hell is wrong with him? But yeah, that chant of the year so far, like, wow, Wrestle Kingdom and this, it's like, guys, slow the hell down, we have like 11 more months to go. But like the first round matches, I thought did a great job of introducing everybody, whether they won or lost. Just Devlin, by the way, who's, again, I thought he did a great job as a heel, sort of twisting around the fact that people might like him because he's considered Finn Balor's protege, and, you know, like, he hates it's all big, but he focuses on, and, like, I thought there was great heel work from him, particularly with the, I have to imagine the reason the very weird finish is that he hit the kick and it accidentally opened him up, and even though he kicked out, the referee then saw the blood and they called it a pinfall. They should have said, like, the match was stopped because of blood. And I think people would have understood. But that was great. And that first night, of course, Mark Andrews came out really impressed. I'd seen him before, so I knew. But I had never really seen him in a full match before. Mostly through highlights. Like, I've seen him, but, like, not the full match. Because I get bored really quickly with TNA. And teed up if you say, well, that's because you don't like good wrestling. Shut the hell up. But I'd seen a lot of highlights from him, so to get to watch a real full match from him was really good. Connors and Drake, I think, was a bit overhyped, But it was a good match. It's just they kept hyping it. This is going to be the match of the night. It's like, and it wasn't. But the Mark Andrews match I thought was better. The Wolfgang match I really liked. Pete Dunne's match I thought was better. But then, of course, obviously the match of the night was Tyler Bates' match. And again, I don't have it in front of me. I probably should. But Tyler Bates' match against... I'm completely blanking on the name as I obviously pause to look up the tournament brackets, because I'm so completely not on the internet right now. Does he talk about Tucker? Excuse me, Tucker, who's from where did they have Tucker? That's very strange, because I'm looking at the thing right now, and it's Belfast, Northern Ireland, but it looks a lot like the English flag. So one person from Scotland, one person from Ireland, one person from Northern Ireland, one person from Wales, and then everybody else was from England. By the way, if you didn't know, the alternatives were Tiger Ali, Ringo Ryan, Jack Stars, and Chris Tyler. It was Saxon Huxley and Sam Gradwell, which was the match I was talking about earlier with the chant. Dan Maloney was the person who wrestled Mark Andrews. It was Tyson T-Bone who wrestled Wolfgang. H.C. Dreyer, I also did a really good job in Trent Seven's first match, which, by the way, I'm sorry. I see Trent Seven's finishing move, Seven Stars, and I just want to go, Rainmaker! Is that weird of me? Tucker and Tyler Bates won a hell of a damn match. It was just really great and really good stuff. And then, of course, the second night, Tyler Bates and Jordan Devlin did a great job. I especially like the finish, to where the mistake Devlin makes is that he thought, oh yeah, I knocked him out again, and didn't, and then Tyler Bates took advantage of that. Wolfgang, through this entire tournament, his match with Trent Seven, Tyler Bates, I'm a Wolfgang fan right now. I'm serious. Like, I've fallen in love with Wolfgang, and I really want to see more of him. I just like his style, you know, the attitude of him, his moveset. He can be a power wrestler, but he can also be agile. Oh, I just think great look. I really like him. Also, what I like is everything built up. And then there was the Mark Andrews-Pete Dunne match, which was, oh, God, amazing. I was like, oh, man, how are they going to top that? Then, of course, Tyler Bates' surprise win over Wolfgang. And then Tyler Bates and Pete Dunne did an absolutely amazing match. And some of the maneuver, you know, the sort of version of Neville, sort of spaceman press that he did. And then to follow that up with, I think that was a 450 double stomp. Or at least it was a front flip stomp or something. Because, like, oh my God, he's going for a 450. No, he goes for a stomp. And it's like, I've never seen that before. And so that final match was great. By the way, speaking of Neville, Neville comes out, cuts a skating promo, like, I should have been in the tournament too. And out comes Tommy End. Not as Aleister Black, or whatever his new name is supposedly going to be, but as Tommy End. Yeah. Oh, damn that match. It's like, I'm filled with all warm and gooey inside. That's probably a problem I should have checked out. No, it was an amazing match, and it gave great pause for the main event. And last but not least, it has to be, I know everybody's been mentioning it, but damn, it has to be mentioned. Michael Cole, Nigel McGuinness, as commentators, just an absolutely amazing job calling the matches. And I think it showed everybody, like, see what happens when you don't have Kevin Dunn and Vince McMahon in your ear telling you 30,000 things to, you know, have to say? And you're allowed to actually commentate on the match? I think that was, like, one of the biggest surprises of the tournament was how good Michael Cole was. I think just for this tournament alone, Michael Cole has taken himself out of the running of worst commentator of the year. Or maybe he put himself in it, depending on how you look at it. Overall, the UK tournament, I think, is a big success. And, you know, looking forward to what this is going to be, we've already heard some news that, you know, ICW and possibly Progress and maybe one other company is in talks with WWE about putting some of their product on the WWE network. And, of course, WWE is going to, at some point, be putting a UK show. And there's also talks about them doing tournaments in, you know, in Mexico / Latin America, and of course in Asia, around Japan and China, or I would think that tournament would probably include wrestlers from Japan and China, India, and Australia, as those sort of the four big markets there for wrestling. You know, this is what I wanted WWE to do. You know, they're working with independents, they're not placing any restriction on wrestlers to be able to work with those companies. I think that's what's going to happen is like, we're going to have this, show, but we're going to allow wrestlers to take independent dates with like what culture, what, just as long as they're not televised, which, you know, how things would go normally. But, you know, we're going to have these wrestlers, and these wrestlers are going to be able to get more money now as, you know, well, we're on the WWE's UK tournament or whatever. And, of course, the tournaments that hopefully will happen around the world. It's like one of the things I was hoping the WWE would be able to do when creating WWE Network. So all of this is just like, it's everything I wanted. It's everything I hoped for. And, yeah, I can't be happier. The UK tournament, I think, is a major success. I can't wait to see more of a lot of these guys from Pete Dunne, Tyler Bates, Joseph Connors, Mark Andrews, Wolfgang, Trent Seven, and of course the others. And again, I just think this is the way I see it. It's like it's a win-win for everybody. The independents are getting their names out. They're going to be more enticing for wrestlers to want to come there because they know if they go to like Progress or ICW, that WWE might be watching those companies more and seeing who's there. And I think it's just good for the scene overall. And I could spend a whole hour talking about all the positives that could come out of this. I think that's maybe something for a different day. Because we still have the Royal Rumble to talk about. So why don't we get into it? Royal Rumble 1996, who's, I had to think up, and guess live podcasting is awesome. The tagline was, "You have been warned, which features a poster of Diesel putting his boot in the face of Owen Hart, presented by the, at the time, World Wrestling Federation, actually took place on January 21st, 1996, to an attendance of 9,600 in Fresno, California, at the Sealand Arena. Your color commentating team for the evening was Vince McMahon and Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into the Royal Rumble. 1990.
I think I'm cute. I know I'm sexy. I've got the looks that drives the girls wild. I've got the moves. I said Sheila, up and down their spine. I'm just a sexy boy.
Sexy boy.
I'm not your boy toy.
Boy toy.
I'm just a sexy boy.
Sexy boy.
I'm not your boy toy.
Boy toy.
I make them hot. I make them shiver. Their knees get weak whenever I'm around. They see me walk. They hear me talk, I make them feel like they're on cloud nine. I'm just a sexy boy. I'm not your boy toy. I'm just a sexy boy. I'm not your boy toy. Eat your heart out, girls. Hands off the merchandise. Sexy, I've got the looks that drives the girls wild. Oh, I've got the moves.
That was loud.
That really move
them. Yeah, old CMG is popping a yoo-hoo for the working man. yes. Yoo-hoo does a body good. Welcome back to CMG's Wrestling Reviews. It's time to go over to 1996 for a Rumble. And again, this is a very, very interesting time, at least for me, because this is a time that I really, like I've said in the past, I didn't really watch WWE from like 94 till 99. I've actually been thinking about it. I don't even think I saw a single episode of Raw ever until 1999. Like, I never was there for the beginning of Raw. I think it because it was on so late and it was past my bedtime, or that USA Network is like one of those networks I technically wasn't supposed to watch because there was too much mature content. When you think about, Up All Night and, those type of, when they were showing those type of movies and stuff. And yeah, my mother actually was a very good parent. I mean, she let me watch stuff, but she also monitored what I watched, and that's a whole nother story. So, again, like, this is an era of WWE that I'm really not familiar with. And all I can be familiar with is what's been said about it by other people in documentaries, and to say that they're right would be an understatement. And I think this Rumble was definitely sort of the last Rumble that's definitely of this era. You see elements from different wrestlers of stuff you would see later, whether it be stuff, there's an interview at the end that, Diesel does about not being afraid of the Undertaker. You see Kevin Nash in there. There's also an interview with Shawn Michaels where it's like, that's not like Shawn Michaels of the New Generation era. That hell, it didn't even feel like Shawn Michaels of the Attitude Era. Though, there is elements of that, but I was listening to him like, God, that feels like Shawn Michaels of what we would see in like 2006. So, like, you saw elements there. And again, it's also very funny to sit here and watch and see all the wrestlers that would go on to make WWE the successful giant it was. Like, the Ringmaster, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Shawn Michaels, Goldust. Wait. You're saying you never heard of the Ringmaster or Hunter Hearst Helmsley? Of course, like, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, like, oh, that's right, I forgot. You may be like me and never watched this and don't know that. I'm talking about Triple H and Stone Cold. And that's a joke that I know fell flat, because I'm sure you, of course, knew exactly who I was talking about. With this, and you have Goldust with, oh my god, I believe this is the debut of Marlena, so much stuff here to go over. Let's get into it. First, WWE had a special free thing on the pay-per-view called Free For All, which featured a match to determine the number 1 and number 30 entry who would book in the Rumble, in which Duke Dumpster Drozzi defeated Hunter Hearst Helmsley by disqualification due to the outsiding interfering of one Gorilla Monsoon, who disqualified Hunter for using a foreign object to pick up a pin. So, we already know who our number 1 and number 30 entries are. But the first match tonight was Ahmed Johnson, who was, I believe, undefeated at the time, versus Jeff Jarrett. You had the sort of brightness of Jeff Jarrett, because this time again, that sort of country singer with the bright glasses thing, and still working that gimmick, and it's... this is just not a good match. Jeff Jarrett tried. I'll give it to Jeff Jarrett. He tried. It just... the thing about this period, it's just so slow. The wrestling just feels so slow. WWF at this time felt the wrestling, all of it. And it's going to be something we're going to talk about later in this pay-per-view. It just all feels slow and dragging. And, like, this is one of the things that WCW had up on its competitor. You turn the channel to WCW and you see a lot of matches where the wrestlers are working at a much faster rate. You know, in fact, I'm in the current process of watching Uncensored 1996 from WCW, which happened in February. It's one of the things I'm thinking about covering. And in the month of February, we'll get to all that later. And, yeah, it's just like, the first match is Eddie Guerrero versus Conan, much faster. Second match between Lord Steven Regal and the Belfast Bruiser, a.k.a. Fit Finlay, faster rate. Even Medusa versus Colonel Parker, much faster. It's like, and there's something about them working that much faster rate to where moves feel smoother and everything, and you feel like you're gaining, you need to catch your breath, and everything that goes along with that. It just feels smoother and feels more interesting, you're more invested into it. Where, and the thing about a lot of these matches, they felt like they went at a sluggish pace. And this match was only a 6 minute and 40 second match. Still felt completely sluggish. And it's like, and then of course you have the dusty finish after dusty finish. Everything has some type of interference. In this case, if Jarrett, for whatever reason, decides, I can't beat him, so I'm just going to take my guitar and hit him over the head. Which wasn't gimmick, but it's like, you don't feel like you have a satisfying end with all of these matches. So, again, I'm using this first match to illustrate an issue that I'm going to be talking about again and again in this review about this pay-per-view. Yeah, I don't think it's a good match. It's a lot of this pay-per-view is fast forward. Next match is Smoking Gun, Billy and Bart, the current WWF Tag Team Champions, taking on the Body Donnas of Skip and Zip with Sonny. The first part of the match was decent. Good tag team wrestling storytelling, and of course interference by Sonny and using her sex appeal, using herself. But the end, it's like I got lost with who was legal, and it felt a bit confusing about who is legal and who is not. It's a decent enough tag team match, but it's, and again, outside interference. I'm getting ahead of myself. Again, the outside interference and the confusion about who was legal, I think, hurt the ending as well. But one thing I did like is I love the variety of sort of tandem maneuvers performed. That was very interesting to watch. Now here comes my favorite match of the evening. Goldust with Marlena versus the WWF Intercontinental Champion, Reza Ramon, the bad guy. I really enjoyed this match. Obviously, I've already mentioned it's my favorite match of the card. And of all the matches, like, here the slow pace felt right. Because again, it was Goldust, and you look at Dustin Rhodes, and you're like, God damn, did he pull this off. But, and you have to think back. You have to put yourself in 1996. Like, realize just how brilliant of a character Goldust was, and it really was. And attacking Razor Ramon's machismo. Let's not mimic it. You know, he was a bad guy because he was Andronicus, or that's a big word that I can't pronounce and probably use it, but the idea is that it was questionable about whether his sexual preference. And it seemed like he's into everything, like he's bisexual. Let's call it this. Seemed like Goldust was trisexualized, and he would try anything sexual once. And so the weeks leading up to this, and just the love letters and the tattoo, and it affecting Razor Ramon's machismo, because again, you know, he's a man. A man doesn't attract another man to him, and it's that whole Latin culture thing. And you know what? It works, because again, it's telling a story, and it's brilliant. Now, again, I don't know if it would work. There's a great story I heard Cody Rhodes tell on Sam Roberts' podcast recently about a recent skit he saw performed at a comedy show featuring Dolph Ziggler, where somebody came out as Goldust and says, like, ooh, I'm a journalist, I'm kind of maybe gay, and that's going to get me heat. And there's, like, saying, like, there are plants in the audience, like, no, dude, we're cool. It's all right. It's 2016. And it leads to him ultimately, like, soaking away, because now his character won't work. Which Cody Rhodes said himself he found to be hilarious. But, yeah. Never mind the noises behind the curtain. Which, by the way, I apologize if you hear a thumping sound on the podcast. That's our water pump. getting to work. Because I'm down in the... Well, let's just say me and Mankind share similar housing arrangements as we're down in the bowels of our establishments, shall we say. But no, I thought it was a good match. Goldust was just great in all of his mannerisms and everything. All the maneuvers were silky smooth. Just a constant, like, always feeling like Goldust was just out of Razor's grasp. Like, he would get him, and he would do a couple maneuvers, and he'd start to get on that roll, but then Goldust would just slide out, and he never let Razor get control. Great storytelling there, and then, of course, Goldust gets the upper hand. He's beating him down, and then here comes that comeback from Razor. Hits a couple maneuvers, starts setting everything up, and once again... Now, the other matches, the Dusty finish didn't... I have been complaining about the Dusty finishes. But of all the matches, this is the one where it didn't feel like it hurt as much. And again, mind you, some of these Dusty finishes were obviously setting up for matches that we'd see later down the line at either the next In Your House or at the next... at WrestleMania. Because again, it was WrestleMania season. You start doing those storylines. And here was one of them in the form of the 1-2-3 kid. Jumping out of the crowd, jumping the top rope, hitting that top rope spin kick on, I think, almost on the back of Razor's head. And allowing Goldust to pick up the win in the Intercontinental Championship. So your new WWF Intercontinental Champion, Goldust. I need to take another swig for the working man for that. I took two. But that brings us to the Royal Rumble. So here are your Royal Rumble entrances in order. Number one was Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Number two is Henry O. Godwin. Number three is Bob Backlund. Number four is Jerry Lawler. Number five is Bob Sparkplug Holly. I don't know if he was Sparkplug at the time. I think he was doing the... Well, yeah, he was Sparkplug, but I don't know if they called him Sparkplug. That's besides the point. Number six, King Mabel. Number seven, Jake the Snake Roberts. Number eight, Dory Funk Jr. Number nine, Yokozuna. Number ten, the 1-2-3 Kid. Number 11... Taco Amaro, Mari, or Mori, Omori. I take Japanese now. I should be able to say these names properly. Number 12, Savio Vega. Number 13, Vader. Number 14, Doug Gilbert. Number 15, Squat Teamer number 1. And number 16 was Squat Teamer number 2, or as I like to call him, Jobber number 1, Jobber number 2. Number 17, Owen Hart. Number 18, Shawn Michaels. Number 19, Hakushi. Number 20, Tatanka. I promise, folks, I know how to speak the English language. Number 21, I promise you, folks, I can speak the English language. Ido Montoya. Number 22, Big Daddy Cool Diesel. Number 23, The Ultimate Fighting Machine, Karma. Number 14, The Million Dollar Champion, The Ringmaster. Number 25, Barry Horowitz, The Jewish Sensation. Number 26, Fatu. Number 27, Jerry Lawler's personal dentist, Isom Yankum. And, you know, there's something about him that's just familiar. I can't put my flames on it. But anyways, number 28, Marty Jannetty. Number 29, the British Bulldog. And number 30, Duke the Dumpster Drozzi. You know, there's a lot of things to talk about with the match. It did felt slow and just like it. There's something about it. Like, some rumbles feel like they go by quick. Some feel like they take forever for all 30 entries to get out. This was that latter. But there were some interesting stories. One was the lack of really eliminations until, I think it was, till Yokozuna came. Yeah, it is when you, because Bob Backlund was the very first one eliminated by Yokozuna. So at that, you got like 9 people in there. Well, 9, early 8 actually, because again, this is the Rumble in which Jerry Lawler hid under the ring until Shawn Michaels found him. So that's actually one sort of famous reason to why to watch this Rumble, because again, this is the Rumble in which Jerry Lawler hid under the ring for most of his 36 minutes and 2 seconds. So you had that, you had Jake the Robert making everybody scatter when he came in. When he came in, he just threw the snake in the ring. Dory Funk Jr. Making an appearance. They said like they offered one to Terry, but he was in Europe doing stuff. Of course, again, and this is why I didn't mind the run-in at the end of the last match, but the 1-2-3 Kid coming down and Razor Ramon chasing him, and again, all that build-up was, I very much enjoyed. Then you had Vader coming in, and them just sowing the seeds of Vader against Yokozuna, and their feuds through tag teams and such, as they sort of stayed away from each other, but then didn't, and ultimately, that would lead to their downfall. As Shawn Michaels would just pick both of them up and eliminate them. And I would sit here and say it's because of the top heaviness up top, and he just picked a leg and as they were trying to eliminate each other. Very much like Triple H did with Big Show and Kane in the 2006 Royal Rumble, if you remember that one. Of course, the Squat Team, which is a new tag team that was debuting in the Rumble themselves, that came out one after another. I made the joke for a reason. It's what they are. It's Jobber number 1, Jobber number 2. And their job? Be fodder for Vader and Yokozuna. Vader, by the way, would eliminate 4 people. Yokozuna would eliminate 3. Diesel would have 5, but your winner would be Shawn Michaels with 8 eliminations. Of course, one of my favorite wrestlers whenever I see him, whether it be on ECW or WWE, Hakushi, it was great to see him. Of course, you would see sort of the very inner, you know, with Montoya and Hakushi and Tatanka, Amari, and yeah, just the different sort of international gimmicks that were there. It was just fun to see all the different wrestlers who would make the ad, you know, from Triple H, of course, as Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Stone Cold and Ringmaster gimmick. You had Rikishi, who at the time was Fatu. Of course, I made the joke earlier, but, you know, Kane's, you know, Isam Yankum gimmick. By the way, I also loved when Marty Jannetty came in, him and Shawn Michaels instantly went into the Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn bit, where, you know, my rivals appear, so we're just going to, like, grab each other by the hair and just start wailing at each other with punches, and the crowd goes wild. And I do actually like the finish of the match, to where you had Karma and Diesel fighting on one end, and then you had Shawn Michaels and British Bulldog on the other, and Bulldog and Shawn Michaels go over the rope, or Bulldog thinks he eliminates him, Shawn Michaels escapes and then eliminates the British Bulldog. As that's going on, I'm trying to remember if Diesel actually helped them, but then Diesel and Karma were fighting, and as Diesel eliminates Karma, and as turns around, of course, the super kick, or should I say, excuse me, let me get this correct, Sweet Chin Music by Shawn Michaels eliminates Diesel, but of course they're friends, and, you know, the clique always stays together. That's one of the fun things after the match. Overall, I thought it was a very, very good Royal Rumble match itself. It started off slow. There are a lot of little stories in it, and it built, and yes, like I said, it kind of remained slow, and that, like, it felt like it took forever to get to all the participants coming out. This, where having an actual clock on screen and showing the numbers of who, what number they came out, I think actually helps. But overall, I actually think it's an entertaining Royal Rumble. There's a lot of very interesting things that happen to it that are somewhat famous, like Jerry Lawler staying under the ring, Shawn Michaels' second win, among other things that I think it's interesting enough to watch. That brings us to our final match of the evening. The Undertaker with Paul Bearer in his mask that he's wearing after, I guess, facing, I think it was Yokozuna and King Mabel at the same time. Undertaker versus Bret the Hitman Hart for the WWF Championship. Now, it has to be said, there's a very interesting story development that would come in towards later, towards the finish, with Diesel, as Diesel would not get out of Undertaker's way as he was coming, going back from the Royal Rumble, and Taker wouldn't get out of his way as he was heading towards the ring for his match, and they had a confrontation. And of course, that would come back to bite Undertaker at the end of this match. Undertaker and Bret Hart are really two great wrestlers. The way they move, the way they know wrestling psychology, the way they know everything is great. There's no questioning that, but this match was just so slow. If you take out the Royal Rumble, it's the longest match of the night at almost 30 minutes. And again, you know, I made this talk about this with Kenny Omega and Okada. And it's just that sometimes a match, I feel, just goes too long. And not that I hate long matches, but you have to have some interesting stuff that keeps people's attention. And it was part of the story and builds. And I just don't feel like anything was built here. Like, Bret Hart spent all this time working on the legs. And it, you sort of feel like it affects him, but it doesn't. Or I say Undertaker, it affects, but it doesn't. Like, Undertaker would sell sometimes, and he wouldn't other times, and it just felt like there was a lot of rest holds in this. a lot of rest holds on the legs that were supposed to tell a story that never came into the finish. And when you're doing something like that, to where you're working on a leg, working on a leg, working on a leg, working on a leg, working on a leg to set up a finish, but then you really don't do that finish because instead you have Diesel come in and get you disqualified so that he costs The Undertaker the chance to have the title, you know, it's like, what was the point? What was the point of going through all this time of you working on the leg, working on the leg, working on the leg, and the small of the back, and working on the leg, and the small of the back, and so on and so on, if the match is just going to end in a disqualification? What I think they should have rather done is maybe have it to where Undertaker is going to win. Like, Bret's trying to go for the leg, but he can't because Taker is just standing too strong and overpowering him, and he's going to get the win. That's when Diesel comes down and costs him the match. And you can do that in a shorter amount of time. And I just think that works better. And here, it's just, again, it was just so slow because, again, while they were building, again, you didn't have the payoff of that build that they were doing with the leg working and the body part working and everything. So, it's still a fair enough match to watch, but quite honestly, I was left disappointed at the end because, like, I saw all this build-up, I wanted to see an end, and then here comes Diesel. Overall, it's the thing that hurt it overall, like I said. The pacing just in this pay-per-view just felt really off. From the first match into the second match, in the final match, even in the Royal Rumble, it had this issue. The only match to where this pacing, it felt like, worked with it really well was the Goldust Razor Ramon match. So, as we get towards the end of this, let me get my top three moments. And number three, the debut of Marlena with Goldust. By the way, special mention, two things, actually. Special mention to the opening of this with Sonny in Soapy Suds, because, damn. And two, by the way, Vince McMahon and Mr. Perfect, I thought did a fair enough job on commentating. I think Mr. Perfect could have done more talking during the event and talking about the psychology more, because when he talked about the psychology, it was great, but he didn't do it enough. And Vince, there's just something about Vince McMahon calling a match that I'm just still not used to. And again, when you've been listening to him as the goddamn heel all this time, I guess it affects you when you listen to him. But yeah. But I thought they did a fair enough job. But, you know, Marlena's debut, number three. Number two, I just started singing a Cinderella song for no reason whatsoever as I'm trying to remember what my number two is. I've lost it tonight. Obviously, you can see what this pay-per-view did to me, and that it was just boring. Spoiler alert. But no, number two, Jerry Lawler hiding under the ring. But obviously a historic moment. But number one, Shawn Michaels winning the Royal Rumble. Top three matches. Number three, in that it wasn't the absolute worst, is Undertaker versus Bret Hart. But a lot of work for nothing. Number two, the Royal Rumble, which is absolute fun. But my top match of the night, Goldust versus Razor Ramon for the Intercontinental Championship. But as I sort of mentioned before, the ultimate problem with this Royal Rumble is it's boring. It's just boring. I hate to say it, it's boring, but it's boring. And there's stuff I like. I like the Royal Rumble. I like a lot of the things. You know, the Royal Rumble is never boring. in my mind. It has boring spots, and that can be true for some Rumbles, but I never see the Royal Rumble as boring. It's always fun to watch. Goldust versus Razor Ramon was fun, but everything else was boring. I mean, this is a major wrestling pay-per-view for the WWE, and they only have 5 matches. Like, I think they could have put some other stuff in there, obviously, but, you know. But done, and it just makes it boring, and it's... They did put a lot of stuff in that was meant to help build up towards WrestleMania 12, and to see those seeds starting to be sown, and all the build-up to start, that was interesting. But overall, except for the Royal Rumble match and the Goldust Razor Ramon match, this pay-per-view, for the most part, is I would say, passable. But I mean passable in, like, you know, you can just pass it by. There's nothing of interest to watch, really, other than those two things. So, Royal Rumble 1996, unfortunately, gets it gets a 2.5 out of 5 for me. Only reason it's probably not lower is because, again, of the Goldust Razor Ramon match and the Royal Rumble itself. So 2.5 out of 5 for me. So that is it for this episode of CM2's Wrestling Reviews. Oh, look at that. We're actually going to be under an hour. I told you I was going to be getting better at podcasting if you listen to my latest Tom's Prerogative. Wink, wink, you should go listen to the latest episode of Tom's Prerogative. Wink, wink. And this actually was one of my goals. I do want to start making episodes a bit shorter so it's not like an hour and a half of you listening to me ramble on and on. So, but that's it for this episode. All the usual things you can pick, you know, you can contact the show at by emailing to the AppSolutionNetwork132@gmail.com. You can find the show here at www.an.132productions.com. We're on Facebook, and I probably need to start creating a Twitter handle or two. I definitely need to get my social media game better. And, of course, make sure you check out all our friends on the sidebar and everything there. And check out all our other members here on the Absolution Network. Shin Tiger, Kuro, John Ramos. Check them all out. So that's it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. Next time out, we're only going a year up. Yes, we are covering a Royal Rumble. That was the first win for the Texas Rattlesnake of the Royal Rumble. Yes, that's right. Since the Royal Rumble is in San Antonio this year, we're going back to the last time that the Royal Rumble was in San Antonio. Next time out, it's Royal Rumble 1997. So, until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember that I'm the most glorious Jew that ever lived, and you can't teach that. Why? Cause I'm CMG. Recognize.
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I bring me down to negative vibes. But I believe, yes, I believe. I say that I believe. Stand on one's feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. And what's this feeling, my love will be falling and ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be falling and ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the layers and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Your mother's a little fast life, but you're dreaming.